both the county and the city with this decision from the Ninth Circuit. They are on notice at this point that that the Ninth Circuit consider this to be a valid request. And
the Ninth Circuit covers what, three eastern states? Three western states?
Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, all of the western.
Is it on appeal?
No. I think they were worried about writing even worse law if they continued on with it. So no, it has not been appealed.
So let me see if I understand this. This is if you're stopped for an infraction or a misdemeanor, or a felony, any crime. How far does this extend?
Okay, this has to do with being stopped for a traffic violation. Anything that would be a vehicle code violation. So that could be either an infraction or a misdemeanor, conceivably. I guess in the case of a drunk driving, even a felony.
This only concerns the vehicle code, hence, for instance, a camping ban or a sleeping ban violation would not be included.
As far as I know, however, I haven't specifically researched that area, so it may work in that aspect as well.
And why did the court say the vehicle code was special in this respect?
Well, there was already case law written in the, I think it's the Second District Court of Appeals, State Court of Appeals, that had already ruled on this issue, and I'm not sure it has been ruled on in any other context. So,
I'm still not clear. I mean, why? So they simply said that a precedent was taken in another jurisdiction that they are now following, or?
Right.
And what was the reason that vehicle codes are different than, let's say, other laws? With other laws, you don't need to be taken to a magistrate. They can book you and hold you for 48 hours, right?
Well, because that is part of the vehicle code.
Oh, it is.
There's a section in the vehicle code that says you must be taken to a magistrate.
So in other words, if the state legislature wants to change this, all they have to do is strike that section from the vehicle code.
Conceivably, yeah.
Right. So.
But that, I would think, would run into some pretty serious opposition, but, we'll cross that bridge when it comes.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah.
So you're suggesting that anyone stopped for any vehicle code violation can say, take me to a magistrate, and of course they should be prepared to be held in jail for a week, and then have to do a habeas corpus action and then sue later.
That's right.
If they want to spend that kind of time and energy, you think that they will eventually prevail? You're offering your services personally?
Absolutely, they will prevail. The law is quite clear at this point.
Right, but you are not offering, let's say, to back that up with your time, energy, and...
Well, on a case-by-case basis, I can never make a blanket assertion that I have the time to do something when it will always depend on my other clients, and I can never put myself in a position of compromising my other clients.
But you're willing, for example, to advise people about this decision or...
Sure.
Pass them copies of it. Again, this is a district court decision. You don't have the name and the citation.
Ninth Circuit Court.
Ninth Circuit, I'm sorry.
Right. So this is a federal court decision.
But if anyone wants a copy of this, they can, of course, go to the law library, and they can give you a call for the name of the decision, or perhaps, how would you like to handle that?
I could go and, I don't know how much time we have right now, I could go and check and see where I'm not sure that I have it real handy.
Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you're interested in the specifics around this decision, and by the time this tape airs on air, we should have the specifics around it. If we don't, we'll get the specifics for you and to you, listeners, because it certainly seems like an important decision. I know that at least one person, Shaz, the widget man, has used this defense not in a vehicular code case, but in a case where he was being harassed on the mall, told he was blocking the sidewalk, when in fact he was simply inquiring as to what was going on with it when a friend of his was being harassed.
Right.
And he went to jail for a period of time, but then he eventually, I guess part of this process is not simply saying, take me to a magistrate, to the police officer. It's also refusing to sign anything at the jail until you get to the magistrate. Is that the process?
So that I don't know about. And like I said, the only context I'm aware is the vehicle code, because it actually states it in the vehicle code.
But I mean, if someone were to follow this process, would you then advise them to carry this through all the way, not to sign booking slips,
I'm advising people to go to jail in that circumstance, and I hesitate to do that sort of thing unless you're prepared to accept the consequences.
Yeah, but this is a natural part of the process. If, in fact, someone wants to test this, they do have to be prepared to go to jail.
That's correct.
And in essence...
This, by the way, did stem from a pretty interesting circumstance where, in fact, I believe B. E. Smith and quite a few of his friends in Shasta County, specifically Redding, drove around with purposely without one taillight in order to be stopped.
That's so often a fabrication by police, or at least some claim of fabrication, that it's kind of amusing.
I guess
the orders went out from the police department. If you see people without taillights, forget it.
Don't worry about it. That'd be pretty interesting if that had happened. But no, they took the bait and in fact are choking on it right now.
Well, perhaps we should get in touch with B.E. Smith ourselves and ask him if this has wider implications for areas beyond the vehicle code, and also the process in jail, because I'm not too clear on that as to whether, since we are advising people here on the air, and this, of course, is not legal advice, it's more illegal advice.
Right.
And that is, you know, if you want to assert your constitutional rights here, you might consider this as a process once you've educated yourself on it.
Right.
Which is
the other person who probably knows more about it than anyone is Richard Quigley.
And perhaps we'll interview Richard. We've had him on the air before. He's, of course, a freedom fighter, was a candidate for sheriff before he was...
Check his webpage, and I'm sure that his... I think that case is on his webpage. Is Quig at USFF.
USSF. USFF.
United States Freedom Fighters.
.com. So it's Quig, Q-U-I-G, at USFF.com.
Yeah.
For all you internet people.
Exactly, yeah. He has a host of wonderful things that you and I can do to... try to assert our civil rights.
Right. Now you know, here in Santa Cruz, we have these police shootings, three of them actually, two by police, Santa Cruz police officers. And we have a case in Monterey County of Vaughn.
The corkscrew murder.
The infamous use a corkscrew, go to the morgue.
I think the more interesting part about all of that is that evidently he was, they claimed that he was suicidal, so I guess what they did is shoot him so that he wouldn't shoot himself.
It was a way of kind of facilitating a difficult situation.
Right, well, keeping him from committing the crime of killing himself.
Yeah, as a form of, you know, preventive behavior on their part.
Sorry, it's not funny, it's just...
So you're going to tell us about the Dennis Perrone, 3,000 votes for Perrone for a Republican gubernatorial candidate,
huh? In Santa Cruz County alone.
And there were about 62,000 statewide, 1.2% of the Republican vote compared to the huge, of course, overpowering number of people voted for Lundgren, that's his name. So I thought 1.2% was a pretty pathetic showing, but hey, I mean, 63,000 votes, I guess that's 63,000 votes.
Well, and especially considering the fact that most people are going to, in that kind of election, are going to say, well, I'd rather... you know, vote for one of the people who has a chance of winning so that my vote really means something.
I don't know about that, because Lundgren was the only Republican, really, you know, respectable Republican candidate, so he was a shoe-in.
Yes.
But see, it was obvious that if anybody wanted to vote any other way, they would have to vote for somebody like Perrone.
Right.
Because this was, after all, the primary, and Republican candidates only were being considered. Everybody could cross over, so considering anybody could cross over, I guess I tend to be... less than happy with the results. But
right. Right. Well, although, you know, most likely the people who were voting for Dennis were, in fact, the registered Democrats, and so that would mean that they had to give up their chance to make a choice in the among the Democratic candidates. So I'd also like to point out one more thing, and that is that in reading my ballot pamphlet this time, I took great pains to read through every candidate's statement, and there are more and more candidates coming out and saying, you know, my goal would be to end this outrageous drug war and the black hole of money that's being spent on the drug war.
Unfortunately, none of those candidates won.
None of those candidates won. I just would urge everyone to very carefully look at all candidate statements in the future and try and steer your vote towards those who have a clear understanding of the absolute travesty of the drug laws.
Also, of course, we had our very own camp vote at the Tuesday Board of Stupid Vipers. I mean, supervisors.
Well, that was the other thing I wanted to do is say, give my salute to Marty Wormut for being for having the guts to vote against it.
And again, the proposal was what, more money for this this war on marijuana?
Yeah, it's just the annual grant application, or whether or not they're going to accept this money to have the flyovers, as well as I think there's enough money in there to hire a district attorney to work, does nothing but work on those cases, and you know, quite a few support personnel, as well as the you know, the actual helicopters and all that sort of thing to do these flyovers. I guess in his statement, Mark Tracy was bragging about the fact that increasingly more and more of these people are actually going to jail and prison instead of getting that namby-pamby diversion stuff.
This is Sheriff Mark Tracy.
This is Sheriff Mark Tracy.
Sheriff Mark Tracy.
Sheriff.
This is the same Sheriff Mark Tracy whose deputies physically abused and stole the medicine and cards from a 59-year-old medical marijuana user at the metal detector, and then for months lost the complaints on that issue. Right?
That's correct, and still remains with the complaints unanswered.
I understand some counties have refused the camp funding. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I think that it's, I believe it's Humboldt County.
Mendocino County.
Or Mendocino, maybe that's it. Yeah, okay. There are some who have actually had the guts to say no, to just say no to their addiction to money. And so they are to be commended as well.
Well, perhaps they're more addicted to power than to money, and they realize up there that they're likely to get booted fast.
Yeah. Well, so, I got another call coming through, and it sounds like...
thank you, Attorney Kate Wells.
It's headed. All right.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, on your radio dial.
We're here with Jeff Almquist, the Board of Supervisors. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm Rebecca. Good to see you again.
Yeah. Just on Tuesday, on June 2nd, at the Board of Supervisors meeting, you voted for the camp funding as a... Was that the campaign against marijuana plantings?
Right.
This is a grant that comes from, is it the state government that provides?
Yes, it comes from the Office of Criminal Justice Planning, I believe.
Uh-huh. And how much money is that?
Approximately $200,000. In essence, what it pays for is the salaries of two deputy sheriffs and half of the district attorney who are involved in the eradication program and prosecutions coming out of that.
So, you voted for this camp funding. I was wondering what your constituents have been saying on this issue. How have your mail and phone calls been running on this issue?
We really didn't get very much input. Several of the people who testified Tuesday, I'm sure, were constituents and I think identified themselves as living in the 5th District. Aside from that, I'm aware of receiving one letter from a group of students at Stevenson College and several phone calls from constituents, basically opposed to the program. What we didn't get this year, which we've received in the past, is wide-ranging complaints about the helicopter activities.
Mm-hmm.
We received virtually no complaints that I'm aware of throughout the entire year.
Now, this program this year was a considerable cutback from the program.
Last year, the sheriff agreed to reduce the number of flying hours from 140 hours to 60 hours as a result of a compromise that I worked out with him that was approved by the Board of Supervisors.
Was that something that you engineered personally?
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that at this June 2nd meeting, you also took a leadership position in which you directed the sheriff and the district attorney to develop a protocol for dealing with medical marijuana users and growers. Why is this protocol necessary, and what sort of protocol do you anticipate will be presented?
Well, I think there's a sense in the community that marijuana isn't at the same level of danger to users that other drugs are, for one thing. A large percentage of people in this community voted to support Proposition 215, I think something like 80%, which indicates strong support for medical use of marijuana and giving people the right to establish a defense to prosecution based on medical use. We heard testimony on Tuesday, though, from several groups, both in terms of personal use of small amounts of marijuana and medical use of marijuana, that there was some lack of clarity or a sense of lack of clarity on the part of that. The cases that the sheriff's office, on the one hand, would refer for prosecution, and the policies that the district attorney would use, on the other hand, to select cases for prosecution from their end. And I think this is sort of a public policy issue, and I think it's fair that both of those agencies give us an explicit statement of what their guidelines are so that the Board of Supervisors can review it. So that should be coming back to us sometime in the future.
Now, we've heard rumors about a 10-plant limit. Is that something?
Well, that's the kind of thing that would be coming out of the table through this process. I think if they have policies, that should be made explicit.
Mm-hmm. Now, your fellow Board of Supervisor Marty Wormhout took what she considered a principled stand on voting accepting the funding for camp. You voted for those funds. Do you disagree with Supervisor Wormhout on the futility of the drug war?
No, no, I think actually the evidence is overwhelming that all things considered as a national policy, it's failed. The issue here, though, is that we have this relatively small grant in the larger scheme of things, and the opportunity to try to improve the program, given the fact that there weren't three votes to reject the grant funding, we were sort of the same position we were last year, mitigating the project as much as we could, given probably only two votes to vote against actually receiving the grant funding.
Mm-hmm. So also, that you argued that some of that funding be earmarked for education. What sort of education are you talking about?
Well, I think, for instance, to a number of DARE graduations, and DARE is a program that the Sheriff's Office now operates in elementary schools. I think it's 17 sites around the county. There's been a request from several junior high schools to initiate a law enforcement-based drug education program for young people in the junior high schools, but there isn't funding for that I'm aware of right now in the budget, except perhaps a pilot program in Aptos. My sense is that this program, the marijuana eradication program that's funded by the state, has a provision in the grant application that requires that a portion of the funding be used for education and public information. The Sheriff's Office, I thought this year was going to do more of that than they did, but if you read the grant application, which was in our agenda package, they actually admit having done almost nothing to do anything about education for young people, anyone else mm-hmm. about marijuana and its effects. So my objective was basically to get the sheriff to redirect some of the proceeds of this grant to those ends. For instance, there was almost $5,000 of travel provided for in the project grant. The sheriff says that this travel has to be used. It's a state requirement. I don't know that, but that may be the case. But in any event, there's a substantial amount of money in personnel time, and there's no reason why the personnel time couldn't be used part of it for education and going into the school, particularly since there's times of the year when there is no marijuana being grown through the brain too hard and the like.
Would you be in favor of modifying the DARE program? I know that the program has received considerable criticism for being heavy on treating what the enforcement end is and very light on the physiological effects of various substances on a person's body.
Well, I don't know if that's totally true. The DARE program that I've seen probably is okay for elementary school kids, but it tends to put things in black and white. It talks about marijuana being a gateway drug, and there's a lot of dispute about whether that's true. I know for a fact that approach won't work with older children, and would lead to a loss of credibility, I think. So I think our thought is that any kind of prevention or education program for junior high school and high school children has to be a program that they accept and believe is providing them with real-life information about the dangers of the drugs, rather than black and white prescriptions about whether something's good or bad and what will happen if you use it, and that if you do use it, it's the end of the world, which is basically part of the DARE program's approach.
Okay, and my last question is, do you think that arresting and prosecuting marijuana users serves any public good? And if so, why do you hold that position?
I'm not so sure that there's any public good to arresting marijuana users. Supposedly, the CAMP program that's funded by this grant is designed to promote marijuana eradication and go after cultivators. I think there is a public benefit in taking appropriate steps to maintain a lid on marijuana cultivation, because I doubt that there's anyone who really wants this candidate to become the cultivation capital of the West. And if you have no program, that is a possible outcome. I'm more concerned about the extent to which this program is used to arrest people with legitimate claims to use medical marijuana. People are obviously small users, and this is being used as a subterfuge, basically, to take them off the street or whatever else the law enforcement objective may be.
So do you feel a responsibility to enact Proposition 215 in some way in this county?
There's a limit to what we can do. As we've seen with the closings of the medical marijuana clubs, this policy is really being dictated at the state level and by federal authorities coming in kind of in a heavy-handed fashion and claiming that this is still a Class 1 drug, and that regardless of what the people of the state of California and the people of Santa Cruz may have enacted by way of an initiative process, that they're claiming that federal law still governs the situation.
Mm-hmm.
There is a limit to what we can do locally. I know that in San Mateo County,
And that was video journalist Becky Johnson interviewing Board of Supervisors member Jeff Almquist. Actually, yesterday, I believe, for her Club Cruise show, she let us dub her tape and pass on the latest political bullshit as I view it. Again, if Almquist is so concerned about cannabis users, why didn't he vote against CAMP? And it's pretty simple. I don't think it requires a lot of intelligence to understand that he's trying to play both sides of the street, and that shows he sold out that principle if he ever had it. That's my view on the whole thing. There's an article in today's San Francisco Chronicle. Two Bay Area attorneys have filed a lawsuit against California Attorney General Dan Lundgren, charging him with thwarting implementation of Proposition 215, the 1996 medical marijuana initiative that allows ill state residents to consume and cultivate pot. The suit was filed Friday in San Francisco Superior Court on behalf of John Doe, an anonymous plaintiff. We aren't going to reveal who he is right now because he is afraid of retaliation, said Kenneth Frucht, San Francisco attorney, jointly filed the suit with Oakland lawyer William Simpek. The suit follows recent court orders that have resulted in the closing of several marijuana clubs, demoralizing supporters of medical pot. Frucht said Lundgren has carried out a ruthless campaign against Proposition 215 and has made it all but impossible for seriously ill Californians to obtain medical marijuana legally. And he has done this using millions of dollars of the taxpayers' funds, says Frucht. He is spending tremendous amounts of money pursuing cases against medical marijuana users that shouldn't be pursued. Frucht said the suit asks the court to order Lundgren to stop prosecuting consumers of medical marijuana, directs the Attorney General's Office and the State Health Department to support the letter and the spirit of Proposition 215, and also asks the state to allow counties and cities to distribute medical marijuana to patients. Lundgren's office had no comment. We're about at the end of Bathrob Spears Broadsides for Thursday. I suspect, unless I get stuck here again, it's going to be a recorded show on Sunday and next week. Again, hopefully with new material, because I always like to get new material in front of all you listeners, even though you don't seem to call in much. I'd like to apologize to Brian Clark, whose interview will be played on Sunday. He's the man who, along with Jerry Henry in the Aptos Shopping Center brouhaha, was essentially not just acquitted, all charges were dropped in the Thurber-initiated prosecutions. I'd like to apologize also to Phil Baer and tell Phil of the Beach Flats his tape will be proceeding on Sunday when we resume, as well as an extensive report on the Citizens Police Review Board meeting coming up and what's been going on around that. Of course, we wish you to stay with us for the next 2 hours, us being Free Radio Santa Cruz and that inimitable environmentalist titan here in Santa Cruz, that radical bearded man who stands behind me even as I speak and stands behind what he says as well, the inevitable, as you can see, it's good that I'm ending the show, Uncle Dennis. So let's go out with a bang with a little of Carol Denny from her album Failure to Disperse, Ready for Christmas, and stay tuned on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM.
Be home. First Radio on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey. What's up?
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, we're having problems with that tape deck.
Yeah.
Is it shut off? Is it shut down?
Want me to shut it down?
Yeah, just push the power button for right now.
Okay.
I don't know what's causing the problem with it, but there's a problem with it.
Which one works?
What's that?
Which one works?
Am I on the air?
Yeah.
I don't want to be on here.
Okay, I'll pull you off the air.
Sorry about that delay there. This is Bob LaMonica here, and I haven't been on Free Radio in quite a while. I'm filling in for Robert Norris. And I've been trying to figure out when I met Robert Norris. It would have been before January of 95. It would have been somewhere between 1992 and 1994. And I've always been impressed by Mr. Norris. I don't always agree with his tactics, but he certainly has the ability and the willingness to take on difficult issues. And among other things that I think should never be forgotten about Robert Norris spent 28 days in jail for food crimes. Robert Norris was charged and prosecuted and did jail time for unauthorized feeding of the homeless up in San Francisco. And he was willing to go to jail rather than plead no contest or find a way to get out of it. Right, so I think this is very significant. And I believe that also, I'll say this about Robert Norris, I think he gets a very bad rap in some circles for being an effective activist. And I think the community would miss him were he not here. What I wanted to do today was to get into a little bit of political dialogue. The phone number here is 423-5361. My name is Bob LaMonica, and I want to talk about politics. And maybe you'll call in at 423-5361. What is politics? You know, we use this word, nickel and dime word, use it all the time, politics. What is politics, in your opinion? I'll give you my off-the-cuff definition. Politics is power relationships among human beings. It's more than just government. Government is a subset of politics. Anytime that we're involved with two people or more people, there's politics, there's power relationships that are occurring. If you disagree with that or agree with that, 423-5361, what is politics? Is the fact of the matter that politics will always be imbalanced, that certain people will always have the power and certain others will never get the power? I'm looking at a copy of a book that I have kept for many years, Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, right? And in the beginning of this book, the classic first opening sentence of the Communist Manifesto says here, a specter is haunting Europe, the specter of communism. By the way, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is an unlicensed radio station. I'm not sure what the wattage is these days, 40 watts or less. And of course, there are regular threats to shut down this broadcast venue. And for what reason? Why would this be such a threat? To whom? To whom would this operation threaten? It's my understanding that, I don't know when it was, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, the licensing procedure for radio stations changed so that no stations were going to be licensed under 100 watts. Most of the public stations that are on operation now started out as 10-watt operations in the 60s and the like, and gradually boosted their power. So they have what they have now, like KUSP or KZSC or what have you, Kazoo. Now, why would that be different now? Is there some problem? I think maybe the problem is the question of control. And even marginal impact is threatening to some. And why would that be? Why would there be a threat to a 40-watt radio station in Santa Cruz, California? 423-5361. What is politics? Now, Carl and Fred, right, writing this Communist Manifesto back in the 1840s, 1848, I believe it was first released, a specter is haunting Europe, the specter of communism. That's what Carl and Fred say. Now, I've always liked the end of the Communist Manifesto, and I've never figured it out. the paragraph right below the last sentence, which says working men of all countries unite, it says here, this is the last paragraph of the Communist Manifesto. 423-5361 is the number. What is politics? What is politics? Or are you beyond even that kind of speculation? Right? It's a waste of time to speculate on that kind of thing. Even to venture an opinion, because your opinion might not be perfect, and most likely it is not perfect. So your imperfect opinion, let's just forget about it. And what we'll do is we'll go along with some slate. We'll get a platform of our cronies together, right? And we'll call ourselves political party X or Y or Z. And we'll have our platform of positions and our slate of candidates. And we'll all get together and we'll deny our individuality for the sake of power, right? Politics. Is politics power relationships among human beings? And isn't it an inescapable part of life? Life being imperfect as it is. Now, maybe you have a plan, though, where things would be perfect, right? If we were to do what it says here in the last paragraph of the Communist Manifesto. The communists disdain to conceal their views and aims. They openly declare that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. Now, what does that mean? I've always been intrigued by that. The forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. I've never met anyone that could identify what all existing social conditions are. And to me, you know, to forcibly overthrow all existing social conditions, what you end up with is the ultimate hypocrisy, double standard, Pol Pot, that kind of trip. Because you still have a ruling class, do you not? In any society, anything beyond hunter-gatherers, you know, eight people getting together picking berries and going out hunting and doing stuff. Anytime you have a complex society, you're going to have a hierarchy. 423-5361. Now, I know this is very boring stuff, and you'd rather listen to, I don't know what, maybe some kind of a rant about some local issue, which is interesting and important. I think it's important, in my opinion, that we apply our values locally. But I also think it's important that we spend some time on the overview, on looking at the overview politically, on spending some time on political philosophy, if you will, learning how to think, how to deal with different points of view, how to grow, etc. We have a call here. Let's see who it is. Free Radio.
Hey, this is Marco from Marco Marocchi from the Chemist Rights Union.
Yeah.
Hey.
So, Marco.
Hey, I'm digging your rant.
Marco.
Rant is rant. Rant is rave, rant is rule.
What is politics, Marco?
Politics, oh, come on. Well, you're talking about it. Classical terms?
In any terms, in your terms.
Well, let's pick up from the manifesto, okay? Because, you know, I read that, and I agree with it.
You do?
Lots of it. Except for the Pol Pot end of it.
Really?
Of course.
Now, how did you figure, Marco, that communism could be manifest in any other way besides hypocritical totalitarianism?
Manifesto?
Well, I'll tell you what, let's go back a step. Define communism for our audience.
Oh, no, you know, I can't. You know, because to me, communism is idealistically synonymous with daily mass democracy.
With what?
Daily mass democracy. Well, we vote on everything, every day. you know, everything that's important to us. The price of beans, the price of rice. You know, the price of rent.
Why would you want that?
Because we would want that.
Why? Because you said so, or why? There must be a reason.
Because everybody would want that. I mean, wouldn't you want to be able to go into your boss and say, hey, us workers here are voting on what our wages is going to be. We vote it be $12 an hour.
Of course
and
not.
And you pay our medical benefits.
Of course. Yeah, but what would that lead to? What would that lead to?
That would lead to, you know, whatever it leads to. We'd have more money to spend. I can go out to a movie once in a while. I can go to a, you know, benefit or a show that I would want to go out to. You know, the local economies would benefit.
What's wrong with profit? If there is anything wrong with profit.
Hey, nothing wrong with profit. I just want to see us profit as much as they're profiting. If we could profit as much as they profited for the last 10 years, if we could do that in 1 year and profit as much as they have, hey, I'd settle for that once in a while.
There's
would
no,
you?
I don't believe that there will ever be any such thing as economic parity, ever.
Yes, there will be. You see, that's where you and I may differ. Okay, and
there will always be
some difference.
There will always be relative
so.
Wealth. There will always be relative poverty. Now, we can acknowledge exploitation, in my opinion, but I think the claims that we're going to somehow or other tax the rich, feed the poor till they're not rich anymore, it's not real.
No, I tell you how it can be real.
Go ahead.
What is the richest segment of the ruling class?
The richest segment of the ruling class? Yes.
Okay. If you want to say, let's break up the ruling class into three sections.
Those that have money. Mm-hmm. Those that have power.
Finance, real estate, capital.
And you could say Fidel Castro. Fidel lives in a palace. ruling party.
How does it compare to Bill Gates, though?
The
How
ruling
does
party.
It compare to Bill Gates.
relatively speaking, it is very comparative. The ruling party in communist China drives around in Mercedes and has chateaus up in the hills,
that's
just
true.
Like they did in the Soviet Union.
That sucks, and that's great at the same time.
It's the human condition, Marco.
And it sucks, and it's great at the same time.
Now, why is it, if I might be so bold, why is it that poor people revere greed and wealth like they do?
I can almost answer that. You know why?
Why?
Because I grew up in a poor working class neighborhood, and we revered the rich. I can't tell you why, you know, or how, but it was true. It's one of those things.
Even historically, we look back at the past.
Even historically, and we've always admired the kings and the princes and the queens and the princesses, right?
Yeah, I mean, why
we
is
always
that?
Thought they were noble, like next to God.
Why is that? Well, when we look at castles,
I have no idea.
Castles in the past.
We got some.
So, but Marco, what is politics?
Politics?
Yeah.
You mean like etymologically? Historically?
In your opinion, what is politics?
Oh, okay. In my opinion, what is politics?
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, politics has got a bad rap and a good rap. Okay, the bad rap is that it's boring. Okay. The good rap is that it can make changes happen. You know, with politics, the right kind of politics, or, you know, politics that are going in the right direction, like mass democratic politics, daily mass democratic politics, which technologically we're almost capable of doing that. You know, a dream I've had, you know, in 1967 when I was in an engineering program in high school, you know, I could foresee, you know, the potentials with technology intermeshing with democracy, you know.
So, but none of that, I haven't heard yet a definition from, in your own words.
Of politics.
Yeah.
Of politics.
What is politics?
Okay, there's good politics and there's bad politics.
Yeah, but still, you haven't defined the term yet.
Okay, politics is the, you know, I don't use politics that much, you know, so I'm having a little bit of of course, historically and
I bet you
life,
use
I've,
it.
I've gone through anarchist,
yeah, but
Marxist,
okay.
Communist, socialist,
I bet you use that word politics every day.
You've been?
I bet you use that word politics every day in your conversation.
You know what? I haven't used that word politics every day in my conversation in a long time, in a very long time. I rarely use that word politics.
You want to give an attempt to define it? Just, you know, in your own words.
Idealistically, my best sense?
Yeah.
Politics is like doing the right thing all the time. You're being committed, devoted to a cause, a vision, you know, where your heart, mind, and body is acting at the same time. To me, that's politics. Like, the personal is the political, and the political is the personal. When you combine your heart and soul into a massive movement for the people, you know, like, to me, politics is Bob Marley, okay? Anything Bob Marley wrote on the Revolution album is politics, okay? That's it. I mean, I can't say no more. Who am I to supersede Bob Marley as far as defining politics poetically or within three, four phrases or a verse or two? You know what I'm saying?
I'll tell you what. Let's see if we can get how many callers can be generated on this. And I really appreciate the call.
Okay.
Marco, thank you.
Oh, and thank you for having the show.
All right, cool.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Hey, if you want to get on the air on free radio here, the number is 423-5361. What is politics? Nickel and dime word, you hear it every day. Politics this, politics that. Politics. What is it? Or is it something that we should just forget about, even trying to define these terms that we use all the time, and we'll just focus on our specific packaged idealism, right? Like in the Communist Manifesto, in the opening sentence, it says here, the history of all hitherto existing society is the history of class struggles. Now, everybody knows what class struggle is, of course. You do all the struggle and I get all the class. 423-5361 is the number here. What do you think about the United States of America? Is it a worthy country? Are you proud to be an American? Or are you are you ashamed to be an American? Do you vote? Do you practice your participatory?